Fairfield, Iowa. And this is Writers' Voices. I'm Shemaine Montana, and with me is Caroline Kilborn. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Shemaine. This is a really good book for this day because it's about sleep, and you know, this kind of weather makes you sleepy.
It's a little drizzly.
Makes you think, you know, a nap would not be bad.
Right. And you know, in the winter when it starts to get darker, people have different sleep patterns, and it's a very timely book for me, too. Today, we're talking with Constantine Darling, who wrote Romancing Sleep. He actually co-authored this book with Terry Salvador Swan. And Constantine Darling has devoted his life to the physical arts and conscious awareness. He was a professional dancer, soloist, choreographer, and artistic director over the course of 30 years, and a teacher studio owner for 45 years. He danced and choreographed in Montreal, Calgary, Vancouver, New York, and Russia. In addition to his dance career, he holds 4 black belts in martial arts, is an inspirational speaker, outdoor adventurer, and workshop leader. He has combined his expertise in training thousands of students in Qian Lung, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, a Chinese martial arts system, dance, and he's created classes in philosophical and metaphysical studies. Over a span of 30 years, he has led ongoing intensive study groups exploring meditation, Gurdjieffian philosophy, Qigong, deep sleep and dream recall, power dreaming, and dream linking. Maybe we can get him to explain some of those things.
Yes, I hope so.
Through nutrition, trance work, meditation, and extensive breath work, he has helped many grateful participants uncover deeper layers of sleep, leading to transformative dream recall. Sleep and dream have been a passion throughout Constantine's life, and he wishes to share that passion with a wider audience, and he has done so with this book, Romancing Sleep.
Well, I don't suppose there's anyone who really thinks they get enough sleep, is there?
You know, I don't think I've ever heard of anyone.
No, I don't think so either.
100% satisfied with their relationship with sleep.
No.
So this book is very timely for us all. Welcome, Constantine.
Hello, how are you? Good to be on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. So tell us where this book came from. When did you decide to write this book?
Well, it's kind of been in the making for since I'm a child. My mother was what I would term a power dreamer. So was my grandfather, and so am I. And I don't know how much we want to get into that because it's a whole different subject, but that kept me very interested in sleep and dream.
Well, I'd like to know just a little bit about what you mean by power dreaming.
Yeah, me too.
And you did touch on it in the book.
Well, this book was geared to just mostly the sleep aspect of it and a little bit of dream. But what I mean by power dreaming and dream linking and dream body is that most people stay in what I would term the REM state dreaming, where they're basically, I believe REM is designed to clear the nervous system and the emotional body of things that happen during the day or weeks past or months past or even sometimes lifetimes past in the subconscious, unconscious, that, or mainly the subconscious, that it gives us another opportunity to relive the experience and release some of the charge. That's one aspect of dreaming, and that's a really important and very good part. But when you learn, or if you're naturally gifted in a certain way, you can actually go to different places. Like, let's say, for instance, you wanted to go to Egypt and learn about Egyptian philosophy. or metaphysics. You could actually go to Egypt, call up a master or a teacher in a certain period of time, and be downloaded, be taught very specific information as though you would be reading in a book or going to a lecture. Or you could go to Tibet, or you could go anywhere, basically, even including the Akashic Records, if that means anything to people, and draw in information or actually have physical changes or health transformations. You can actually also dream link with other people. What I mean by that is that you go to sleep, like I used to do with my first wife, and have shared dream memory where, let's say, she's on the hill and I'm in the valley. We actually remember the different textures of the dream as though we were in daytime, having a complete recall of what we had during the day. And sometimes you can lead a person or persons. For 2 years, I had a study group on Salt Spring Island in British Columbia, Canada. And we dream linked. Sometimes there were 18 to 20 of us, and sometimes 6 to 8 of us would have shared dream recall in one evening.
You, so 6 to 8 of you would be in the same dream?
In the same dream, recalling it exactly our different positions in that dream. And the way we would do it is we would draw in the morning to make sure that we weren't just fooling ourselves. We practice having dream journals and also drawing before we, because dream, power dreaming, is actually remembered better and in a deeper state when you recall color, symbol, and sound before you recall word. So we would draw symbolically our dream. If we woke up, we'd train ourselves to wake up and put a little flashlight on an open paper and draw the scene of the dream and any symbols that came up with it. And then in the morning, after we had our own personal practice of dream recall, we'd come together and show each other the pictures. And it was amazing how often the pictures would be perfectly matched.
Oh, my goodness.
Except the difference is one person would be on a hill, one person would be in the water, one person would be up a tree. And
Wow. So, I used to have a lot of real flashy, interesting dreams myself, angels are saying, flying me through the stars and saying, are you ready? I'm going to show you the nature of the universe. Or, are you ready to see the face of God? And I'm terrified. No, I'm not ready. Little old me. Oh, no. And then I get shown these things. And I used to write them down and find a lot of significance in them. But I found that it kind of took over my life and that it, I had to stop asking for dreams and instead just ask for some rest, because if I remembered those dreams, they would sort of haunt me all day and it would take a couple hours to write them all down and I'd be more spaced out during the day. Or if I was, flying and kind of omnipresent and all-powerful in my dreams, then in the daytime I'd be more spaced out and more apt to, have car accidents and things. So I just kind of gave the whole thing up. And in your book, in this book, Romancing Sleep, you talk about that dreaming is good for stress release and that dream recall is good for you. And so I wonder if you could tell me exactly how that is, or how you can sort of... Doesn't it conflict with rest? Because I wake up feeling like I haven't gotten any rest. I've been busy all night.
I do that too, especially if I'm looking for something and I can't find it. I wake up exhausted,
right?
Because I've looked all night for something I couldn't find.
or you have a new job or something, and then you find that you're working all night. I'm at my computer working all night. And I think, well, if I'm gonna work all night,
I'll stay up, right?
May as well stay up and accomplish something.
Well, sleep and dreams have mystified people for, since the beginning of time, I'm sure.
Right. And, there are whole tribes in Australia and South America and all over the world that do what I've been talking about, power dreaming and recalling dream, and they actually, one of them, the tribe sleeps with their heads together in a tent, and then when they wake up in the morning, they share their dreams, and they have incredible... And the shaman in Australia... the Aborigines do dream linking and learn where to hunt and where water is and all kinds of things from dreams. So answer to your question, in the society we live in today, there's so much happening. There's so much information coming in. There's so many things happening on so many different levels that most people feel incomplete at the end of the day. They feel like no matter how much they did, they couldn't get enough done.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What happens is that ingrained into the nervous system that things haven't been done. When they go to sleep, they're already in a state of overwhelm in the nervous system, and they can't turn the overwhelm off because it's been running too much. It's just an aggravated. It's like it's almost like being on speed. There's just too much. So in the dream state, when you go to sleep and you're too wound up from the day, you will tend to dream all kinds of different things, and usually somewhat stressful things, because you're getting a replay of what you're already in.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things about this book that I think is really important is that during the day you give yourself momentary stops, momentary pauses. So along with the book will be a bunch of programs you can pull up on the computer that give you a 1 minute, 2 minute, 30 second, 5 minute trance induction that puts you into deep levels of rest, even deeper than most people have in sleep. And it relieves the nervous system of the stress factor. It puts it in a calmer state so that when you go back to work, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, where you're working on a jigsaw puzzle or you're working on a problem of some sort, and you just can't, you get to a point you just can't go any further.
Mm-hmm.
You're a bit frustrated. Then you go away, you go to the bathroom, you have a drink, you whatever, and you come back and you look down at the same thing that was troubling you, and all of a sudden you just know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because you took yourself away from it and you shifted the brainwave.
Hmm.
So it's my belief that everything in our lives works on vibration and frequencies, and that if we learn to soften our frequencies and go into a more neutral, relaxed state more often in the day, that will affect our dream state at night. It will affect the way we dream. It'll affect the kind of dreams we have. They won't be as frenetic, the dream state, because we've gotten some of the downtime we need during the day. And the subconscious and unconscious, as it is right now for most people in our daily round, is so cluttered and so we stuff everything we don't want to deal with down there.
Hmm.
So when people haven't been cleaning house in the subconscious, unconscious realm, what happens is, in sleep, all these messages that are wanting to come through and have more access during the day feel blocked and constricted and contracted. So it gives us a very unrestful, almost, some people are fearful of their sleep. Like, I have a person who teaches thousands of people, and he teaches consciousness. And he said to me one day, how much he didn't like sleep, because when he goes to sleep, he has all these busy dreams and he can't seem to stop them, and it makes him feel very unrested.
Mm-hmm.
So I offered to him that, you know, what I'm just offering to you, and I gave him a series of practices for softening during the day, just like, for example, 7 sighing breaths. You take a deep in-breath before you find yourself busy on the computer, you're frenetic, you stop for a second. You plug your feet into the earth as though you have roots coming out of your toes. You feel grounded. You take a slow, deep in-breath, and you sigh. Sighing helps to soften the nervous system and to de-stress it.
Mm-hmm.
You notice children and animals, cats, almost everything except for adult humans, sigh quite regularly. And it's their way of de-stressing themselves, softening themselves, and making themselves ready for rest. So even just 2 or 3 sighs before a meal, when you find yourself frenetic on the computer, when you find yourself with too many things to do, can make a huge shift. When this man started practicing that, he had deeper, more restful sleeps. And it's a fascinating thing how that works.
And then if you are prepared to have more restful sleep, when you do dream, the dreams will be more effective as stress release instead of just stress rehearsal?
Exactly. Although sometimes not. Sometimes, you know, we have stuffed things down. Like, I don't know if you've experienced this, but let's say you're having a very deep emotional series of experiences, and you go to sleep and you keep dreaming that series of experiences that you're having, trying to come to some kind of resolution. That's going to happen regardless of what you do, because we want to find balance. We want to find emotional completion or mm-hmm. resolution.
Mm-hmm.
So in circumstances like that, the one thing you will have if you're less stressed is you'll have more clarity and less compression around the subject. The dream will be less, what's the right word for it, explosive. It'll be a smoother ride.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say, you use the word softening, and your example of sighing was a good one from the book, that you're talking about literally doing things that soften your physiology.
Exactly.
You also used the word in the context of vibrations, soften your vibrations.
Exactly.
I think of vibrations as just being high or low. Are there softer vibrations, or did you just mean softening the vibratory quality of where you're at?
Vibratory quality, slowing down, basically.
Yeah.
Everybody's running at such a high speed these days, and not just a high speed in one direction, but in multiple directions, that their nervous system is raw, it's overcharged, and we need more times during the day, not wait to sleep to get rest, but find places during the day, like a really great example, and it's in the book, a fellow named Farley Mowat, who's written a number of really outstanding books, wrote one book called Never Cry Wolf. And when I was much younger, in my teens, I read the book, and it struck me, one of the things, he studied wolves during this time, and he found out some very interesting things. And one of the things he found out was that wolves slept all during the day, and they would have these things he termed wolf naps. But you've seen animals do this, where they'll just curl up to walk around themselves
mm-hmm.
into a little ball, lick themselves a few times, take a deep sigh, and go to sleep. And they'll sleep for 10 minutes, 5 minutes, half an hour, whatever it is, and they'll wake up completely refreshed and start moving around. He found that wolves did that more often than not, because that's what he was studying, and it kept them, it gave them enough sleep. They didn't sleep the full night the way he would have thought. They do these wolf naps. So he started practicing the wolf naps and found it was very, very effective in keeping himself balanced and well-rested. So I started doing that in my earlier years and found it super effective. I can put myself under in a deep sleep in seconds, really.
Bye.
And there's a number of trance inductions or sleep drops, that I term them sleep drops, that people can do and create a 2-minute, 3-minute, 5-minute, 10-minute deep restful sleep and wake up completely refreshed.
Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about a wolf nap, you're not necessarily talking about curling up into a ball, but just the power nap. I've heard known some CEOs that call it a power nap.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, just throughout.
You know, the the research on is it the that nerve that runs down and into your diaphragm, the vagus nerve?
Right.
Is that part of that breathing, diaphragmic
yes, it
breathing?
It definitely affects that nerve.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. It really does. Yeah, I know that does. It calms you down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you talk about diaphragmatic breathing in your book.
It's so important. You know, if you look at a child, a baby, a newborn,
yeah.
you can see their belly moving. You can see their diaphragm moving with each breath. You can see the rib cage expanding. The lower floating ribs are designed to expand and contract. And as we get older, we have less and less movement in the diaphragm and less movement in the lower floating ribs. And that, again, oxygenation, and also not just the in-breath, the out-breath, the exhalation clears us when we completely out-breath, which is what a sigh is. It releases the negative toxins that need to be released in the lower lungs so that when we take in a next breath of air, it's full, it's oxygenated, it's full prana, instead of half of its good oxygen, the other half is poison sitting in the bottom of your lungs.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you practice diaphragmatic breathing, then it becomes more automatic, and you can breathe that way even without conscious effort.
Exactly. The day.
Well, yeah. Both of us are singers, so we breathe that way.
Well, when
we're singing.
You know, singing, I don't know if you know about Alexander and Alexander technique, but you know, he found that diaphragmatic breathing and certain ways of standing released the natural voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a great voice professor at BYU, actually, who has a technique that's almost all based on physical posture and how your posture and can create the physical spaces in your body to create a more beautiful tone. Anyway, just a side note.
But it all fits together, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons people enjoy singing, and singing is such a spiritual practice, because when you're singing, you're breathing better than we usually do, and so you have real elevated experiences
mm-hmm.
of joy and
well-being.
Yeah. Well, there's a few questions I have about the timing of sleep. Like you said, the optimal bedtime in the winter is 9 p.m., and there are certain things that happen between 4 and 6 a.m. And I've always had this question. In Ayurvedic medicine, there's also suggestions that certain times of the day have different qualities, and so the most important time to be asleep or the most restorative sleep happens between 10 and midnight. Would you agree with that?
You know, that's a tricky question, because for me anyway, because yes, I would agree with that. But I also believe that humans are incredibly adaptive, because what 10 o'clock is here is not the same as it is in Australia, and it's not the same as it is in China, it's not mm-hmm. the same as it is anywhere else in the world. And I found my wolf naps take me into deep sleep, and I wake up, no matter when, feeling way better.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've also had to, depending on certain jobs I've had, sometimes I've had to be up all night and sleep during the day. And after a short bit of time of realigning my nervous system, I had wonderful sleeps. So yes, there may be certain times that you'll get a deeper sleep. And, you know, a lot of the Ayurvedic and also in acupuncture and shiatsu, they talk about at different times of the day, different organs are more prevalent,
mm-hmm.
that they light up, if you would, during certain parts of the day. And if you're in the right cycle, with your daytime activities, you're actually helping those organs. I believe that's true,
mm-hmm.
but I also believe that there's no such thing as an ideal, you know, especially these mm-hmm. days with having to work sometimes one or two jobs plus kids plus whatever else we have. That ideal, for most people, is just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to learn to adapt, and I think one of the things about humans that's really most extraordinary is our adaptability.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, there are certain times that are better, but I think all of us are in a position where we can't really do that very well.
Mm-hmm.
We have to find ways to get as close as we can to what that is using other methods.
We have to do what we can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You talk about between 4 and 6 a.m., there's a substance called prolactin active in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And can you explain that a little bit?
I don't know. Have you ever meditated?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever meditated during the day, say 12 o'clock or different times of the day, and felt differently if you've, you know, practiced your meditations at different times of the day? If you notice the different times of the day makes you feel differently, your meditations, or takes you into deeper states?
I'm not a very experienced meditator myself. How about you?
No, me neither.
No, I haven't had that particular experience. Although I think I notice just in general a different feeling quality
Okay.
About different times of the day.
Well, I studied Zen meditation for some time, and I used to get up at 3:30 in the morning to get to the Zen temple at 4, or just before 4, so we could do our meditations from 4 to 6 in the morning. And mm-hmm. on one level, it was very difficult. But once I got into it a little bit, it was amazing the clarity and the quickness of dropping into a very special place and activating what you might term higher mind. That time of the day, for a number of reasons, is very, very beneficial, and that prolactin is one of the reasons why it's beneficial, because it helps to set up the perfect, as I said before, vibratory frequency so that you can be in a completely relaxed state of mind, not a busy state, but a really soft, clear awareness where everything slows down and everything calms down. If you've ever been in an accident where something, you see the accident coming, and all of a sudden everything slows down.
Mm-hmm.
Everything just, you know, it feels like what's really just took a few seconds took an hour. That state is brought into presence because of the prolactin, and I think also because at that time of the day, most people are in a very specific form of sleep and rest, which is much slower. There's less people on the road. There's less people thinking and active. And the other thing most people don't realize is that we are affected by the larger social framework. So if everybody's running around during the day hyper-busy and frenetic and worried about bills and how am I going to make this work and how am I going to make that work, that's the wavelength that's prevalent all around us, and it affects most people. Mm-hmm. Some people are less aware of the effect, and some people who are hypersensitive are much more aware of the effect, and some of them are even traumatized by it.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, I've noticed Wayne Dyer suggests that we get up at 3 a.m. That's when he gets up to do his writing. I saw him give a talk, and he says, how many people wake up and look at the alarm clock around 3 a.m.? And most of the audience raised their hand. And the Sikhs also wake up at 3 or 4, or maybe right at sunrise, but very early to meditate. And I've heard from lots of friends who also
around the world.
Yeah.
It's a very important time.
Yeah. So then you talk about we make prolactin and then dopamine and then cortisol. Is the prolactin a precursor to dopamine, the way serotonin makes melatonin?
In a sense it is. Each cycle goes into the next. If you want, I can read some of that chapter that you're referring to.
Sure.
Okay, this is nutritional considerations for sleep. We have all heard the saying, you are what you eat. Not only does food metabolize into flesh and bone, but types of food you eat also have a direct effect on your mood and sleep patterns. Food comes in one of two categories, acid or alkaline. A pH less than 7 is acidic, while a pH more than 7 is alkaline. Your body works hard to sustain pH levels in various body systems. The human body was created to predominantly thrive on a 75% alkaline-based diet, i.e. fruits, vegetables, and vegetables. Acid foods comprise the other 25%, are meat, potatoes, bread, grains, coffee, and dairy. In our society, most people have reversed this ratio to 70-80% acidic diet, which creates a very toxic internal environment for the body. The buildup of acidic waste accelerates cellular and biological aging, as well as increases cancer risk. On the other hand, the body's cells and systems have optimized functioning in a slightly alkaline environment. In the earlier section on breathing, the parasympathetic branch of the nervous system was described as shifting the body from fight or flight to rest and relaxation. A predominantly acid environment in the body keeps your central nervous system in a sympathetic dominance. using your adrenal glands, causing your adrenal glands to be overstressed. Alkaline-forming foods enhances parasympathetic dominance, causing the body to feel relaxed and the person to feel more passionate about life. One state of mind, emotional state, and how relaxed the body is during a meal changes the nature of food we are eating and how it affects us once it is assimilated. For example, one can be sitting in front of an alkaline plate of food in a highly agitated state of mind or emotional frustration and anger or intense hyperactivity in the body. If a person eats food in this state of mind, the alkaline ash normally created by food becomes more acidic. The reverse is true for eating an acidic meal in a meditatively quiet and still appreciative state. Societies and disciplines dealing with the mind and emotions of the body have diets that are predominantly alkaline in nature. These societies often incorporate rituals that foster stillness, peace, and presence of mind. It is recommended that whether you're eating a healthy meal or not, you pause for a moment of silence in front of your food. I even recommend a few sighing breaths to still the nervous system. Take a moment in this stillness to set the intention that the food you're about to eat will enter your body and create optimal health and well-being. Have gratitude for plants and animals, sun, rain, farmers, and grocers that made it possible for you to have the food on your plate. This is not meant to be associated with religious ritual. It is suggested as a way to harmonize the physical act of eating with proper digestion and the metabolism of food.
That's great. I really enjoyed that section of your book, particularly. Do you know, is there something specific we can take nutritionally to help our body produce prolactin? Because you said that when we have prolactin and dopamine in the right balances, that depression falls away quickly. And I take tryptophan to help my body make serotonin and tyrosine to help my body make dopamine. So is there something that I could take to help my body make prolactin? Or is it just something the body does?
It's something the body will do if you're in right balance. And you know, too much, the interesting thing about taking any supplementation is you can take too much or too little, or mm-hmm. you take one thing, and if it's not balanced by another nutritional aspect, it doesn't get metabolized, or it becomes almost toxic.
Right. So ideally, you're getting all that nutrition from food.
Yeah, if you're balancing your meals right, and you know, as Sam Gracie suggests, he's my guru in that field. Supplements can be very good. You just need to get to somebody who can dial it into your, you know, just taking supplements. If you're already in a highly acidic condition and you take certain supplements, it actually creates, even though it's supposed to be good for you, it creates a negative reaction because of the chemistry of your body, if you would.
Mm-hmm.
Really important. I mean, depending on how much you want to get into real nutrition and taking supplements, to get to a naturopath or somebody who knows quite a bit about nutritionists and get checked, get your pH checked, get your, you know, urine and blood and so on checked,
mm-hmm.
and then balance your nutritional supplements to your chemistry and slowly bring it round to a more alkaline, more balanced.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Ayurvedic medicine will do it. I mean, there's so many systems out there that work at keeping the body and bringing the body into complete health and balance. And I would recommend, you know, looking into that aspect, because just taking something because you read about it or, I have so many friends that have medicine cabinets full of all different things, and they'll take
mm-hmm.
huge amounts of vitamin E because they read vitamin E is good for you, but they don't balance it with anything else. Plus, the vitamin E they bought is terrible. It's not natural. If you're not getting food-grade vitamins and nutrition, in many cases, it's just not,
mm-hmm.
it can be actually detrimental to your health.
Right, yeah. Well, so let's talk about the different sections in your book, because the nutrition section was just one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Will you go through and just summarize what you offer in your book?
Well, I think, in one point, I'll just read the first poem that starts the book, and it really is, I'm suggesting something to people that they, instead of think of sleep as something separate and far away or just something they have to do, or let's get rid of it, let's just do it and get done with it and wake up the next day, that they begin to romance what sleep is. They begin to, as you would a loved one, you make little offerings and you appreciate. When you have a good sleep, you wake up and you give deep appreciation to the sleep. Give deep appreciation to the subconscious, unconscious. When you have a powerful dream, you give yourself a moment to feel how it's affected your body, your somatic presence. So this, I think this poem kind of gives a sense of what I mean. My bed becomes a ship in the night on a soft undulating sea. A sweet crescent slip of moon sends lunar nectar between the sheets cascading over my flesh. My bed is surrounded by sweet scent, warmth, and the flavor of what is to come. Sleep, blessed mistress of the night, she enters the altar of my body, stilling the restless mind and sending soft shivers of relaxation through the body, embracing the longing of the heart.
You say that poem before you go, when you go to bed, that would be very relaxing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and that's the thing. There'll be a whole series of things like that, and short trance inductions. I don't know how much you know about hypnosis and trance, but somebody that is practicing meditation, it takes quite a bit of time to get the full value of meditation, to be able to drop into the different brain waves. Not negating meditation, I highly recommend it, but there is a quicker route. You can drop into a very, very powerful deep state and change your brainwave in minutes using proper trance inductions. There's also the Monroe products and the Monroe Institute, which has developed all kinds of hemi-sync, balancing the brain, balancing the brainwaves. There's many products out there which we recommend which help a person within minutes and eventually seconds, really, to go from a very busy brain state into a completely balanced, as I say, softer wavelength. And once your system has learned that it can do that and do it at any given time very quickly, when you go to sleep, you just have to put yourself in a light trance and boom, you're gone.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And the other thing is that's very interesting. I hear so many couples these days that tell me they're not sleeping together. They're not sleeping together, I mean, at night in the same bed, either mm-hmm. because of apnea or because one of them jumps around in bed all night or, you know, just that they're having a hard time getting a good night's sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some really lovely things you can do. You can do a shared trance induction using a hemi-sync tape. And the other thing you can do that some families do when they're going to give birth, there's something called effleurage. It's a quality of massage. And, you know, it's a lovely thing to create a practice where the couple begins practicing for a few minutes, half an hour, whatever they feel they have time for, to give each other a very gentle, soft, loving massage. While the person's receiving the massage, getting them to breathe slowly and deeply and sighing and going into a soft meditative state with loving touch. The other thing that my mother did for me, which was just so wonderful, and I did it for some of my children, reading a story to your child at night and doing effleurage or holding them or cuddling in bed with them at the same time as you're reading a story with a really a dramatic and soft and inviting voice that allows them to have deep connection with you and a sense of nurturance and a sense of wonderment, and allow them to go to sleep with that sense of wonderment. And she read me books of fantasy, so when I went to sleep at night, I would dream about the fantasy things. And in the morning, she would ask me, "So how are your dreams?" And quite often, my dreams were about the fantasy she read to me the night before, and I got to share them with her and have a feel validated for having a beautiful dreamscape.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that bring a family closer together and keep everything in a nurturing, loving, supportive context, which helps the nervous system soften.
And recalling and sharing your dreams is one way to express gratitude to your subconscious.
Big time. Yeah. And when somebody gives you feedback, you know, and says, wow, that's great, and or how did that happen, or what did you feel about that, it draws the subconscious and unconscious into feeling like they're actually valued in our conscious state. They become more, you know, in many societies, the dream state is highly valued. And when people wake up and they have their shared dreaming, sometimes for example, supposedly there were a number of people in Thailand that knew the tsunami was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the elephants
from the
did for sure.
Yeah, from the dreamscape.
Yeah. Well, I want to make sure we have a chance to talk about where people can purchase this book.
Well, it's pretty simple. It'll be available on Amazon.com as a paperback within the next month and a half. In the meantime, chapters of it are available on RomancingSleep.com.
Okay.
That's a wonderful title.
There'll be suggestions on RomancingSleep.com of different trance tapes and other things that people can purchase and use so that they can, you know, we're recommending all kinds of other people that have done deep work in trance and meditation and whatever so that they can link up with people that are doing great practices wherever they are.
And talk and, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this was really a wonderful book, and it is a wonderful title. How did you come up with the title and the concept?
Well, you know, when we started the book, I've actually been working on another book for close to 25 years. It's called Fields of Consciousness. I don't know if it'll stay with that name, but I've had study groups for about, close to 30-something-odd years, four mornings a week, 5:30 in the morning till 8. And through that, a couple of people made suggestions that I start the book as a smaller book with Fields of Consciousness, sleep. And one of the people I've known for a number of years, a wonderful writer and ghostwriter as well, her name is Geraldine Gendreau. She's co-written quite a number of books. We started the project, Geraldine and I, and then Terry Salvatore Swan became part of it. And in a brainstorming session between us, when Geraldine heard some of my ideas and felt into where I'm coming from with it, she said, well, it should be something that really includes romancing. And as we dialogued over it, we came to Romancing Sleep, Deep Sleep.
Mm-hmm. And your book is full of little suggestions for things you can do all day long to kind of leave love notes for deep sleep the way you would for your sweetheart.
That's right. Definitely. Right.
And it's a beautiful concept. And in the beginning of the book, you talk about examining how we feel about sleep. Does it seem like, is it something we dread, something we have to do, one of those, you know, pesky maintenance tasks that we have to do, or do we look forward to it?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I spoke to another radio show host, and it was a very interesting interview because I won't say who, but the person said that they were very interested in sleep and that that you know they were working on a few books themselves. But what was interesting over time was no matter what I said, the person said, "Well, that's going to take a lot of time, or I don't have time for that, or I wish I didn't have to sleep so much, it takes up too much time." And, you know, a lot of people, the feeling that they're running with is there's not enough time in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Gets in the way. And if there was a way they could sleep less and have more value in the sleep, they'd be happy. We're running so fast, and people feel like no matter how fast they go and no matter how much they do, they can't keep up with what's happening. It's it's almost like a virus, and it's hurting people. I think the softening has to start long before we go to sleep.
There's quite a bit written about improving environment of sleep place.
Oh boy, is that important?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, satin sheets, if that makes you feel good. you know, scents, if that works for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is an interesting study as well that is in the nutritional thing. Sam Gracie is constantly checking out studies on sleep, and one of the things he found, interesting study one of the universities did, that if somebody goes to sleep in a room that has any kind of light, light coming from a computer or light coming from under the windows or anything, they'll get asleep, and it'll be at a certain brain wave.
Mm-hmm.
If a person sits up in a chair in a completely black room with absolutely no sound and just closes their eyes for 2 or 3 or 4 hours.
And no light.
More deep rest and go into a deeper brain state, brainwave state, than the person who's sleeping with light in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also affected by if your computer's left on. If you're in a room with TV, radio, computer, and other electrical things running, even if they seem off, they're still throwing out electrical impulses and emanations. That definitely affects your nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
So the less plugged-in electrical contrivances you have in the bedroom, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Deep sleep and deep rest.
Yeah. Well, we're going to let you go a few minutes before the top of the hour because you have a class to teach, right?
Yes, I do.
Can you tell us what you're doing?
I teach a number of different things. I teach Qigong, deep breathing, meditation, dance. I've been a dancer most of my life. And, you know, I'm 62. Most people think I look like about 40. And I think it's, you know, the way I look and a lot of the energy I carry. People say, well, how come you have so much energy? Well, I plug into the earth every day. I do Qigong. I wake up early and do my own practice.
And I get good sleep.
And I do walks in the woods barefoot.
Hmm. Interesting.
Try to go in the ocean whenever I can. I really connected to nature. So I take people on journeys around the world to what I call power spots, like chakras of the earth, so that they can recharge, feel nurtured, feel that the earth is there for them.
I don't remember where I read it, whether it was online or in the introduction to your book, but one of your students saying that he studied with you for 10 years and that's how much you had to offer, that you kept him busy as a student for 10 years.
Yeah, and that person that wrote that is a PhD in cognitive psychology, and one of the reasons why he picked that subject was because he wanted to actually have, to be able to study a lot of the work that he did with me and have scientific proof as to the effects that it was having on the brain waves and the different things. So he works with NASA, and he works at the University of Santa Cruz, and he's still deeply engaged in the practices that we've worked on together. He actually studied with me more than 10 years. I've known him and worked with him since he was 15, and he's now 36.
Nice. Well, is there anything else you wanted to leave us with before you head off to your class?
Everybody take a nice, deep, soft inhalation. Oh, God, that feels so good.
It does. It does.
It does, like a walk barefoot in the woods.
Yes, sir. Thanks for the conversation. It was really a lovely interview.
Well, thank you for your book.
Thank you for joining us, and good luck with your class. And, oh, I did want to ask, you gave the website for people who want to learn more about this book. Is it the same website if they want to learn more about the other classes you teach?
If they want that, there's two websites. One is Inner Vision, Outer Quest. com, and that one's all about the trips I put together, and also it has links to other things. And the other one is DancingDragonsKungFu.com, which includes all my work with Qigong and yoga and all the other things.
Excellent. Well, thank you, and ride safely to your class.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Too. Bye-bye.
Well, that was lovely.
Wasn't it? He's an interesting person for sure. And gosh, you know, riding a bicycle now. He's going to ride a bike because he's having car trouble.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he's perfectly physically able to do that. Where does he live? Did he say?
I don't remember.
It must be somewhere where the weather is fit.
I think California.
Yeah,
but
probably.
I don't remember. You know, I love the title Romancing Sleep.
Oh, I do too.
It's so much nicer than the medical term of sleep hygiene.
Yeah.
It just makes it sound like, oh, it's just something you got to do, you know.
You know, I've been trying something. I have trouble sleeping, and so I'll just say, okay, I can't go to sleep. I'm just going to lie here and rest. I'm just going to rest.
Mm-hmm. One of our earlier authors, Elaine Aron, who wrote The Highly Sensitive Person, says, if you're too frazzled to sleep, just lay with your eyes closed and don't worry that you're not sleeping because you are getting the rest you need.
Mm-hmm.
And Constantine Darling said almost the same thing. If you turn the lights out and shut the sounds down, you are getting the rest you need.
Yeah. I've always had to sleep in the dark.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I started using an eye mask, I found that my sleep was just felt twice as deep.
Well, I've never done the eye mask thing, but I have my windows completely covered, and unfortunately, my neighbors have lights on all night outside, so I had to really, you know, use dark claws and everything to keep the light out. But it's helpful if I do that.
Yeah, I'm going to do that actually. I'm on my way to Walmart. Constantine sold me on the idea.
Yeah, good.
The number one thing I got out of this book is just that throughout the day, we didn't exactly say this, that going into the void, he calls it, or going into that really deep place of rest throughout the day trains your body to practice switching from amped up to resting.
We have to do that because, as he pointed out time and time again, we travel at such a fast speed. That so many things and the information that comes to us, you know, is amazing. And they have some commercials about that. This child asks his mother a question, and she starts talking about all this stuff that's, you know, the kid's looking at, what's going on? But that's what happens. It's an overload.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all carry around an overload most of the time.
Mm-hmm. And we have to honor that and just take the time. And you know what I've learned? I said this last week, I think, that if you're busy and you think you don't have enough time to relax, actually you don't have enough time not to relax. Because if you just keep going and going and going and never give yourself a time out, you end up crashing and spending more time recovering than you would have if you just took those barefoot walks out in the woods.
Right. And you know what? If you do download some of his things, all of them may not be right for you because everyone is different.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may have to try a couple different things before you find something that's really, really for you.
Mm-hmm. And this book was really full of suggestions, different meditations for relaxing, different ideas for setting up your bedroom, and a lot of them really don't take a lot of time. And he even says, don't do all of them all the time, but mix it up. Just have a toolbox of
ideas,
things you can do,
uh-huh,
and just nurture yourself.
Give yourself a chance to rest.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this was a very timely book for
it
me,
was.
And I really got a lot out of it. Really felt blessed to be able to.
So we should give the it'll be on Amazon.com, and it is Romancing Sleep.
Romancing Sleep by Constantine Darling, and
that's a neat name too, isn't it?
That's a great name. I'd like to know if that was his given name. And also co-authored by Terry Salvador Swan, who has a bachelor's degree in psychology, and she was. I'll just read this little thing about her. I think we have time. That her personal interests have led her on a path of self-inquiry through physical movement, meditation, hypnosis, and nutrition. After experiencing the positive effects of these healing modalities, she was eager to co-write this book to share its information with others. And this is her first book. When she isn't writing, she is out walking her two Irish wolfhounds, Fuji.
Whoa.
Fuji and Finula, who have taught her the most about non-ordinary reality.
Wonder if they take wolf naps.
Maybe that's where they got the idea. Oh. Well, next week we are talking to Rick Hansen, who wrote Buddha's Brain. So it kind of picks up on the similar thread. It's called Buddha's Brain, The Practical Neuroscience of Happiness, Love, and Wisdom. And I was just poking through this before the interview. It has a great nutritional section and lots of suggestions for releasing and relaxing and little meditations and some discussion of mindfulness, Buddhist mindfulness, and some great illustrations of some of the neurochemicals and how they work in the brain.
Which is all related to the food that we take in.
Mm-hmm.
People realize how important diet is. I mean, it's like an interview with Merrill Hemingway mm-hmm. in Whole Foods, and it's a whole thing out there of taking care of yourself, watching what you eat, watching what you watch,
mm-hmm.
watching what you
I'm a believer.
Watching what you listen to, watching what you think,
yeah.
Watching who you associate with.
Mm-hmm.
It all goes together.
Mm-hmm. And you know, like Constantine was saying, there's so much information out there, so many systems, and it can be overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And you can end up with a medicine cabinet full of every supplement at everybody's, you know. But if you just find the things that work for you, you know, I've just found that if you keep looking and you find the little magic combination that works for you, it can really be life transformative. So we're so lucky, I feel so lucky to be doing this show and being exposed to all these great,
oh, I know.
Great
There are
books.
A lot of self-help books out there, a lot of them. There always have been. But I know you go to Revelations and they have, you know, shelves of self-help
mm-hmm.
books. You guys don't know where to start, you know. But there's new ones coming out all the time. And those are the ones, of course, that we're talking about on this show. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. Shemaine is our producer and is able to get a hold of these authors. Mm-hmm. It's really great.
Well, yeah. I have my secret weapon these days is Susanna Gratz, who's the publicist for next week's author, Rick Hansen, and this week's author, Constantine Darling, and Mariel Hemingway, and some of our mm-hmm. great
Yeah, when
authors.
I tell people that I interviewed a movie star, they what? She was the sweetest, wasn't she the sweetest person?
Really lovely.
Yeah.
And her voice had such a, I meant to write her a thank you note, you know, her voice just had such a lovely, energetic lilt to it. It was a
it
real
did.
Testament to
what she's
she was doing.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Well, do you have a quote for us? We're out
I do,
of time.
I do. You know, this is for all those those people, I don't know if they might be listening or they know somebody who dropped out of school. Among the few things more expensive than an education these days is the lack of it.
Very true. Very true. And, you know, an education can come in many forms, including
That's right.
public radio.
That's right.
So we are blessed. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you next time on Writer's Voices. Thank you.
Writers' Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, and Shemaine Montana. Archives available at KRUUFM.com and WritersVoices.com. Writers' Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.